Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. You may remember my previous conversation with Mallory Millett. I thought, you know what? Let's just keep going. It's too much fun. Mallory, I don't know how to sum you up. There's no way to sum you up. You're a fascinating person. You're a person of devout Christian faith. You love your country. And we normally talk about that kind of thing. But last time we were together with our friend Ann Coulter and your husband Thomas, who's here, we were talking about Hollywood stuff, and it, I just thought, you've had so many experiences with so many people that are really, you know, bold print celebrity names. I mean, Marlon Brando and Elizabeth Taylor, these are not, you know, minor figures. So why don't we start there? I mean, you were acting very early, and you said already in the 60s you were studying acting on the same street as the studio.
Well, no,
with Lee
Strasberg. I was not studying acting in the 60s here.
Okay.
I was, I think I studied with Lee, that was in the 80s, I believe.
Lee Strasberg was still teaching in the 80s?
Well, he died in 1982, so it couldn't have been that. It was before he...
Because if this is the mid-80s...
It was just before he died.
I just got to hate to break it to you. That wasn't Lee. So he died in 82. He stars in The Godfather... I'm sorry, he doesn't star in The Godfather, but he has a role in Godfather 2. He plays Hyman Roth.
Yeah.
And but Marlon Brando studied with him. All the greats, it seems to me, or a lot of the greats from that era, Paul Newman, they studied with Lee Strasberg.
Well, see, Marlon did not really like the Actors Studio. He studied with Stella Adler. And Stella Adler was a whole different kettle of fish. Stella Adler and Lee Strasberg became rivals, tremendous rivals.
Okay, I forgot that. So the method, that was Stella Adler or Lee Strasberg?
That was Lee Strasberg.
Okay. So I know Marilyn Monroe studied with Lee Strasberg. Mm-hmm. And because we've had Johnny Russo's been on this program, he had a role in The Godfather, and he was just talking about, you know, that all happened on this street here in New York City.
Yeah.
But so all these greats studied with Lee Strasberg or Stella Adler, but you knew Brando. So let's just go back to Brando. How in the world did you meet Marlon Brando?
Well, it was, again, the Minda effect. We call it Minda Land.
Okay, this is the woman that you met.
My friend Minda.
In the 80s.
Yeah, I met her in 1968
when
I came back to America. And when I left Manila, everybody in Manila said, you have to look up Minda Feliciano. She knows everybody in Hollywood. She will introduce you to everybody. It will be a really quick in.
Okay,
to
so
the
you
Hollywood
are very
inside.
Young. It's 1968.
Yeah.
And she introduces you to Marlon Brando?
Yes. Yes. Well, actually, her girlfriend, there were two girls, Marie and Minda, that were Filipino girls who hung around together all the time. And Marie had had a long history with Marlon. They had been on-again, off-again lovers for a long time. She ended up having a baby with him. That's another whole story that I could tell sometime, but it takes up too much time. It's a very meaty story.
A very meaty
story?
What the heck does that mean?
Marie and
Listen,
Marlon.
Listen, we're friends. I don't know what you're talking about. What does that mean? They had a
pithy,
baby together.
A pithy story.
A lot of people, they can assume how that happened, but there's more to the story.
Oh, well, he denied paternity, which, of course, he was the father of the child. There was no question about it.
Well, see, I also deny paternity, but here's the issue. I'm not the father of that child. So in my case, it's not inappropriate. But in his case, he was trying to avoid paying.
And the thing is that they had agreed to have a baby together. They had plotted this baby. They had planned this baby. So now when I meet her, she
has... Was it a handshake deal or did it go farther?
Oh, no. When I meet her, she has this four-year-old daughter, and I have a four-year-old daughter.
Did the four-year-old daughter look a lot like Marlon?
Not really. No, she had a weight problem like Marlon. But when I met Marlon, he was still slender. He had not gotten fat. He was still very sexy and gorgeous and absolutely a movie star when I met him. And Marie and Marlon had this classic, wild, mythic, I don't know, legend relationship where they just, I saw them, I watched them throw whole sets of china at each other.
Isn't that sweet? I just love, you know what? St. Paul talks about that. It's just a beautiful thing when people become one and they throw china,
whole sets of china
and stuff.
The vitriol and the passion and the sexual magnetism between these two people was just beyond distracting. I mean, you could hardly conduct a life around these people at all because it was one crazy melodrama after another. And I ended up in the middle. I ended up being the one that Marlon is calling at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, "Do you know where she is? I can't find her anywhere."
Can you imitate Marlon Brando?
What?
I love the idea of Marlon calling you up in the middle of the night.
Oh, constantly he called me
to find out where she is.
Marlon had a thing about talking on the phone, and he would call you at midnight, and at 9 o'clock in the morning you would still be on the phone with Marlon. This was,
you would be on the phone with Marlon. Yeah, I would have hung up.
No, you couldn't get away with that. You hang up, he'd call you back. You know, he.
Well, you know, you can take the phone off the hook. You probably aren't aware of that technology. You can take the phone off the hook, but okay. So Marlon, you're in this world with these people, and of course Marlon Brando in 68 at this time, he is a, it doesn't get very much bigger than Marlon Brando, but he'd run his career into the ground.
Terrible.
I mean, when you think about his big stuff, you know, when he was working on all the classic films with Elia, yeah, Kazan. But by the later 60s,
he couldn't get work. He couldn't.
And why?
Well, first of all, he hated Hollywood, despised it with a red hot hatred.
Okay.
Not only that, but are you ready for this? This is quite a revelation.
Remember, there's children listening.
Marlon Brando loathed acting.
Yeah.
Loathed it. Hated Hollywood.
Why?
Hated the whole acting world. Hated Broadway. Hated movies.
Why?
Didn't want to ever act again. Because he used to say to me, "Mallory, it's fine for a woman. It's a feminine profession. You might be able to get somewhere in it, and you might enjoy it. But for a 44-year-old man," he was 44 at the time, "for a 44-year-old man to have 20-year-old kids who don't know anything about anything, giving him orders and telling him when they can work and where to stand and how to speak and how to do, I've had it. I'm a man. I need to have a manly life. You know what I'd like to be? You know what I'd give anything in the world to be?" And I'd say, "What, Marlon?" And I'd sit there and I'd say, "You know, I'm sitting here listening to Marlon Brando say he hates acting."
Yeah.
And nobody's ever going to believe me.
Right.
I mean, you're blowing my mind here.
Yeah.
And he said, "You know, I'll tell you," he said, "if I had my druthers in this world, I would be the first vice president of Prudential Life Insurance Company." And I'd go,
"That's kind of
That's
funny,
hilarious.
Though. He was very
hilarious.
Smart and funny, but that is hilarious." Well, he's basically saying, I want a normal life.
I want to go to work and come home and be done with it.
Right.
I just want to have a normal family with some kids and live like a normal person. I can't stand this life. No.
What year did he do Mutiny on the Bounty? Do we know? That's way before you met him. That's like the early 62, 63?
Something like that, because that's, I think it's before I went to Asia, or right about, I think I might have been in Asia when he did.
I mean, I'm just thinking that was when he met the woman.
Tarita.
That he married?
Yes, he did marry Tarita. Uh-huh.
So he married her and had children with her.
Yes,
How many children did he? Did he?
He had 12 children in total.
That he was willing to acknowledge.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, he finally acknowledged Maya, Marie's daughter. My daughter and Maya were very dear friends. They played together. We lived around the corner from each other, and so. But he had always denied paternity, and now Maya was around 12 years old, something like that. And one day I got a call from Marie, and she said, "Marlon is going to have Maya over to his house, and he's going to tell her that he's your father." I said, "Oh, my gosh, how did that happen?
Yeah.
You're kidding me." She said, "No, and he wants Kristen to come with her." Now, my daughter
was
Kristen.
That's your daughter.
My daughter.
So she had to be in the middle of this melodrama?
So she said he'd like Kristen and Maya to come to the house together.
Yeah.
And he's going to include Kristen in this.
You know what?
Crazy
I would
scene.
Like Kristen to be there if we can arrange this when I tell my daughter that I'm her father. Now, she already knows that, but I still want Kristen to be there when I repeat it. We're going to be right back, folks, talking to Mallory Millett. Hey, folks, are you concerned about memory loss for you or a loved one? VivaLore's founder prayed that God would show her the solution to memory loss because her mother had dementia. After many divine encounters combining faith and her background as a pharmacist, Susan Gibson created VivaLore Memory Support. VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It won awards and has 3 books independently written about it. Visit VivaLore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. VivaLore is for those with normal memory, mild or severe memory loss. Don't wait until your memory slips. The pathology starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. That's VivaLore, VivaLore.com. Check it out. Remember, VivaLore is a premium quality all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. VivaLore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R at VivaLore.com. Enter promo code 20 for 20% off. VivaLore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like 4? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Folks, we're talking showbiz anecdotes, completely fluffy, nonsensical, and fun. And I have my friend Mallory Millett Danaher, MalloryMillett.com. Mallory, look, you have so many stories. You were friends, good friends, with Marlon Brando, who grew to be the size of a house at the
he
end of
really
his life.
Did.
I mean, it's kind of an amazing thing. Orson Welles, Dan Aykroyd, there are certain people that they just blow up mm-hmm. beyond reckoning. You try to imagine what's going on over there. Yes. But you knew him when he was thin.
Oh, he was glamorous. He
and
was beautiful
human being. I mean, beautiful
physically,
and you know, as an actor, I sometimes always wonder what's the big deal about certain people, and then you see something when he was in. I guess it was Julius Caesar when he does the
Friends, Romans, Countrymen.
The Friends, Romans, Countrymen. When I saw that, I thought to myself, "Now I get it." Mm. I just thought to myself, I never really had seen whatever that was, the je ne sais quoi, about him. I mean, everybody knows he's a great actor, but where you finally see, like, oh my goodness, he's a genius. But you saw the human side of him. So in the late 60s, he's calling you up. You said during the break that you talked him out of suicide.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Marie would call me, and she'd say, I'm up in San Francisco right now. And it would be midnight or something. I'm up in San Francisco right now, and Marlon's home alone, and he's going to kill himself. And you've got to get over there right now. And I'd go, Marie, it's midnight. It's Marlon. He's, you know, please. Mallory, you've got to go there now. You've got to get in your car and get up there right this minute. So I would do that. I would tootle on up to Marlon's house.
And this is where?
Up on Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
12900 Mulholland Drive was his address. I remember it very well. And I would go up there, and there I would find Marlon, and he would be, you know, Marlon was an alcoholic. This is something that nobody in the whole world ever knew. Nobody knew he was an alcoholic. It was never said about him. You've never heard it said about him, right?
You don't hear that, no.
No, he had a terrible problem with alcohol, and he would be up there all alone with a bottle of booze.
Would he be wearing a kimono or a dress or something?
No, but he had a raccoon who lived in his bathroom. He had a raccoon named Emma that lived closeted up in the bathroom. So, I mean,
Why did Marlon totally have a raccoon
sane.
In his bathroom? And when you say anything... it sounds to me like some kind of a dirty euphemism. He had a raccoon in his bathroom, if you know what I'm saying.
No.
He had a raccoon closeted in his bathroom, just saying.
What do you mean Emma was doing in the bathroom?
Why did he have a raccoon named Emma in the bathroom?
I can't tell you. I have absolutely no idea.
Okay.
It was instead of having a dog. I have no idea.
Right.
I used to ask him, and he'd just laugh. No, he just, I don't have
okay,
no
but
idea.
So you'd visit him, and he...
I'd go up there, and I'd talk to him. I'd keep him from killing himself. I'd be there for four hours.
Why would he want to kill himself?
Oh.
I don't understand.
Well, first of all, alcohol is a depressant.
Yeah.
And people who drink a lot of alcohol are generally depressed all the time.
You are now, and I've known you for years, you're a woman of serious Christian faith. Were you a serious believer in those days? Was that part of the strength that you brought? So no.
You were
just a friend.
I was very New Agey then.
Uh-huh.
I had a guru in Manila, you know.
You had a guru in Manila.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like another dirty euphemism.
No.
Hey, you remember that girl?
I'm worried
she
about
had
your
a guru
mind, Eric.
In Manila. Do you know what I'm talking about? No, so wait a minute. Come on. You had a guru in Manila. Okay, so you're into the New Age, but you'd go and you'd talk to Marlon Brando. You know, I don't mean to make light of this. This is horrifying. So he really wanted to kill himself.
Oh, definitely. Oh, he wanted to be dead. He hated his life. He was so miserable.
What's the last connection? When did you stop being friends with him?
Well, you know, I really needed so much to be able to make a living. And my friend Minda's husband was a man named Leo Guild, who was a gossip columnist in Hollywood and very, very well known. And Leo was worried about me too. He'd say, "We got to figure out a way for you to make a living. We've got to, you know." And one day he called me up and he said, "I want you to come to a meeting with me today. I've got an idea for you." So I go to this meeting in Hollywood with a man, and I've never gotten it straight what this man's name was. I keep thinking it was Huntley Buntley. I keep trying to remember this man's name. It was sort of like Mercedes-Benz, or I don't know. It was one of those
Armin
crazy
Hammer.
Names. Something like that. And Leo ushers me into this room with this man, and this man starts telling me that they run Confidential magazine, and they wanted to have, you know, remember Rona Barrett?
Unfortunately,
Rona Barrett had this 5-minute show that went along with the evening news every night. It was a gossip show.
I remember Rona.
They wanted to have a rival to Rona Barrett, and they wanted me to do a 5-minute nationwide broadcast of gossip running along with the evening news.
Like R. Corey Hay?
Yeah, and they offered me this job right off the bat. They said, "We're going to do a pilot. We're going to work on it for 6 weeks, and we'll pay you $1,000 a week." I hadn't seen $1,000 in, you know, I don't know how long. I was flabbergasted, and yet I wanted to be a serious actress. I was into this thing where I was going to be a great actress, you know, and all of that. And so I kept saying to these people, "I can't do that." I mean, nobody would offer Rona Barrett a role on Broadway. It would be a joke.
Right.
Nowadays, you could do stuff like that. But then, no, that was not allowed. And I said, I can't do this. I mean, I was heartbroken. I needed the money so badly. But I said, you know, my mother would die. She would kill me. If I ended up a gossip columnist on the evening news, my mother would never speak to me again.
Right.
I mean, I can't do it. I can't do it. So Huntley Buntley said to Leo Guild, "Take her to the Brown Derby. Buy a big, wonderful lunch for her and talk her into it." So Leo took me off to the Brown Derby, and we're sitting at the Brown Derby, which is where all the stars were. It was this fabulous restaurant. And he's saying, "Look at this place. If you take this job 2 months from now, everybody here is going to be coming and kneeling at your feet. They're all going to want to be." I said, "I can't do it. My mother would never speak to me again. You have to understand. I've got this mother that you don't cross." And he just, you know, he said, "Mallory, are you crazy? Listen to me. You're a lousy opportunist." I said, "Why?" He said, "Look, people are offering to pay you $1,000 a week for 6 weeks. And then at the end of the 6 weeks, it's a redo. Like, you can both decide. Both sides can decide whether to go on together or not. they'll have gotten pilot out of you, and they'll be able to use that, and they can go hire somebody else. Just take the $6,000 and run if you want to do that.
Yeah.
But at least you'll have money. And I went, oh, my God, I'm so crazy. Why didn't I think of this? And he said, let's do that. So we went back to Huntley Buntley's, and I have no idea what this man's name was.
You're making me wonder. Who was this guy?
And we told him I would take the job. So I go home, and I'm going to have this job where I make $1,000 a week. I'm so excited. I'm so thrilled. And at midnight, my phone rings.
Let me guess. Is it Marlon?
Marlon. And you know, the way you knew it was Marlon is you'd pick up the phone and there'd be this breathing. He never announced himself. He never started. He would just be sitting there. I'd say, Marlon, I take it it's you. Definitely you. You know, he said, I hear you got a job today. In this terrible tone of voice. I said, what? How do you know? He said, I know everything that happens in Hollywood, Mallory. You've got to get used to this. I know what's going on. You've accepted this job to be a gossip columnist? Are you crazy? Why would you have anything to do with a man like Leo Guild?
So he's the lowest of the low. So he talks you out of career suicide.
So he's yelling at me. He's saying, how dare you? I said, okay. Here's what your problem is, Marlon. You're paranoid, and you think I'm going to sell you down the river because I've been so close to you, and I've been involved in so many intimate moments with you,
yeah,
and all kinds of personal, seriously deep,
right,
personal experiences and traumas,
right,
and dramas.
Right, right.
You think I'm going to use that?
Yeah.
And he said, no. I said, yes, that is. Marlon, I know you. This is what you're worried and upset about. And he said, no, it's not. You want to be a serious actress? You're a phony. You don't want to be a serious actress. You just want to get famous. I said, no, I don't. I'm going to do it and then quit after 6 weeks. And he said, no, you're just, you know, you should go to the Actors Studio. If you want to be an actress, go to New York and be a serious student of the theater and learn everything about how to be a great actress if you really want to do that.
Right.
But don't have anything to do with Leo Guild, and don't do a stupid, cheap thing like this. You're above this. You're too good for this. I don't want you to do this. So we're screaming at each other. We're interrupting each other. Now we've gotten into a thing where we're each hanging up on the other. One of us is hanging up, and then the other one would call them back, and then the other one would hang up and then call them back. And this went on for several hours. It went on half the night. And then that was it. I sent him a telegram the next morning that said, your mother wears combat boots. And
did you eventually...
I quit the job the next day.
But I'm saying with Marlon, did you ever shake hands and make up?
No, I never saw him again.
You never saw him again?
No, because within 2 days, I had left. That's another whole story.
Wow.
I had left for New York City. He told me to go to New York City and study.
And you did.
And I listened to him.
And you never talked to him again when he was famous in The Godfather and all that? You never talked to him?
No.
Okay, folks, when we come back, we're going to find out why. Don't go away.
When I wanted you to share my life, I had no doubt in my mind. And it's been you, woman, right down the line.
Folks, we're talking about Marlon Brando, and then we're not talking about Marlon Brando. Either way, you win. Hey, we're talking, Mallory Millett, we're talking to you about your relationship with so many of these celebrities. It is comical. It's amazing because you're a serious person. You've had these amazing experiences.
And don't look for this. I've never looked. I've never wanted to meet celebrities particularly.
Well, look, let me
and
just...
This just keeps happening
in God
my life.
But God has his hand on your life.
Yeah,
we can't
really
get into
does.
That right now, but that's a fact.
Yeah.
And he's used you in dramatic ways. You said you wanted to finish up something about Marlon. You said that you had something else
to
say.
Well, the thing that really broke my heart was what ultimately did happen to him, because with all these children and all this craziness with his son... murdering Dog, his daughter Cheyenne's fiance. And Marlon had this gorgeous daughter, Cheyenne, that he had with
Cheyenne
Tarita.
was the daughter. Anybody
Tarita.
Who's seen, they should see his Mutiny on the Bounty. It's spectacular.
Yeah.
And he plays Fletcher Christian. And, of course, this is historically true. It's a true story. But, so making that film, he falls in love with this woman,
Tarita,
who is a Tahitian.
So gorgeous.
And has a child.
Several children with him.
Several children.
And one of them is Cheyenne, who is the most exquisitely beautiful girl you ever laid eyes on.
Okay, so Marlon's son murders
Christian.
His daughter's
yes.
husband, fiance.
Fiance.
I remember when this hit the tabloids about 30 yeah. years ago, whatever it was horrifying.
Well, and I knew Christian from the time he was about 5 years old. He was an adorable little boy.
Did he ever get out of prison?
Yes, he did get out of prison. He's dead now.
He's dead?
Yeah.
Marlon Brando's son is dead.
Yeah,
how did he die?
I don't remember. I'm not quite sure. But
well, we joke around, you know, about these glamorous lives. There's such
yes,
pain. I remember Dick Cavett said this once. He was talking, maybe it was when Elizabeth Taylor died, but he's, you know, because he knew all these people. And Dick was talking about how, you know, when you know them close up, there's tremendous pain. He says, I wouldn't trade places with them because there's alcohol abuse and misery and drug addiction. And people don't see that side.
It's hell. I mean, Shelley Winters really wanted me to be a star. And she ensconced me in that house for 2 years and gave me exact instructions of how to conduct myself in Hollywood and who the people were that she would introduce me to and everything.
This is the 70s.
And I never followed her direct. I never
Why?
Did what
Why?
She wanted. Because, you know, I didn't want to be a star.
You didn't want to take that route.
I've never seen such misery. They leave such wreckage behind them. It is such a terrible way to live. I didn't really want
it. And
you
knew Michael Caine pretty well.
Very well.
And
very well. Because my friend Minda nearly married him. Minda and Michael were together for 4 years. And they would come and they would be in Los Angeles living at Leslie Bricus's house. You know who Leslie Bricus is?
Oh, my gosh. Nobody knows who Leslie Bricus is except Eric Metaxas.
Yes.
Let me tell you. I'll tell you why I know. Joan Collins, your friend,
yes.
was married to Anthony Newley.
Yes.
Okay. Anthony Newley, whom I can imitate, but I won't do it on the program. Leslie Bricus, just about one of my favorite films ever. Is the Scrooge musical written by Leslie Bricus, wrote the music for it. And the songs in that Scrooge musical came out in 1970. I saw it in Radio City Music Hall in 1970 with my father, took me. And all I can say, or my grandmother took me, and all I can say is that those songs are magical, and I've sung them my whole life. So to think that you knew these people really does kind of amaze me.
Oh, I've lived with Leslie and Evie Bricus. I've lived with them. I've traveled with them all over Europe. I've stayed on Minda's yacht with them for weeks at a time.
Did you ever meet Albert Finney?
No.
Because Albert Finney stars as Scrooge in that thing.
I never
and he was
met
34
him.
Years old, and he plays this old man Scrooge. But it's a great Christmas movie.
Such
we
a
watch
great
it almost
actor.
Every year. But the idea that you knew the man who wrote the songs
yes.
that I've been singing all these years.
Oh,
gosh.
And he is a darling. Leslie Bricus is a darling.
Is he still living?
I just love him. Yes, I think he's still living, isn't he, honey? Yeah, I think he's still living. Yeah.
I want to meet Leslie.
I want to meet
Leslie and Joan Collins. Okay. Alvin, write that down. Okay, so...
But what I was about to tell you is that when Christian Brando murdered Dog, Cheyenne's fiancé, you know, I know the room that happened in. You know, the library that happened in is the same room that he had brought my daughter and Maya into to tell them that Maya was his daughter. He told her, you are my daughter. You can use the name Brando from now on. I'm going to take over your education. I'm sending you to a school in Paris to finish your high school, and you're going to go on to college. I'll take care of everything. I'm going to take care of everything. I'm going to be your father from now on. And my daughter was a witness to this scene. She sat and watched the whole thing happen. And so that was the same room that murder took place. I was so haunted by that, you know, I'd spent so many hours in that same room, and that was the room that murder had happened.
It's heartbreaking. I mean, you see these lives again. They seem to have everything you could ever dream of, Marlon Brando. And then you just see brokenness upon brokenness
terrible.
Upon brokenness. It's
it's Cheyenne
hard.
Is dead now, too, the beautiful girl, his daughter. She committed suicide. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So
I mean, this is truly horrifying.
These
I mean, look, you know and I know, everybody needs the Lord. They need
Absolutely.
God. He loves them.
Oh,
and they are just so lost. They're living in a world where they've got everything but what they need.
Oh, Marlon had no God, no God at all. You couldn't even get him near that. He was a complete atheist. He laughed at everything. He had a lot of mockery in him, you know. And he was...
I think we're going to a break here. Folks, I'm talking to Mallory Millett. Don't go away.
You can go your own way.
Once there was a way to get back homeward.
Mallory, we're just talking about your life. What a life you have led. And all of these characters that come in and out that we think of them as these silver screen gods and goddesses, and you know them, you knew them. You knew Michael Caine quite well.
Yeah.
How?
Well, my friend Minda got involved with Michael Caine. I remember she called me up once and she said, "Guess who's in love with me?" Never forget. I said,
nice
what a
question.
Way to...
Yeah.
Not guess whom I've fallen in love with.
Yeah.
You know,
she, yeah.
She's, "Guess who's in love with me?" I said, who? She said, "Michael Caine." I'm going, "What? What's this?" She had gone to the Philippines to spend Christmas, and Michael had been in the Philippines filming, and some friends had introduced her to him, and they got into a big romance.
What year are we talking about here?
Okay, we're talking
about... I'm just trying
to
figure out, what was he filming in the Philippines? I can't think of...
We're talking about 67, 68, right in this period.
Yeah, I don't know.
And she and Michael got into this four-year romance that was really very intense, very passionate, very kind of difficult. And they would stay at Leslie and Evie Brickus's house all the time, because that's where Michael would stay when he was in Hollywood. Leslie and Evie had a big, beautiful home, and up on Tower Road. And
they're not back in England?
No. At this point, they had this beautiful house on Tower Road. And I spent a lot of time at that house for various reasons, whether Leslie was staying there or not, it was whether Michael Caine was staying there or not. It was just that we were all part of a little crowd there in Hollywood, and a lot of things went on at Leslie and Evie's house, because it was a beautiful place to host parties. And in fact, I spent one evening there at a party with George Hamilton and Robert, what's his name, the one that was married to Natalie Wood, Robert Wagner and George Hamilton. And Minda and I spent an evening, the four of us, sitting together for about 4 hours. And Robert Wagner and George Hamilton together, they could have made a fortune as a comedy team, those two. They were so funny together. You just died laughing every single minute you were with them. They could not. They were so witty, so clever, so erudite, and so well.
Was this before the death of Natalie Wood?
Oh, yeah, because Natalie was there, too. Natalie was sitting...
But she didn't make much of an impression on you.
Yeah, well, she did. It was Natalie and Robert and George and Minda and I sitting opposite them, the five of us. And Natalie was I really got a key into her that night, because I was watching her, because she was very nervous about these two attractive women talking to her. Her husband seemed to be too interested in Minda and me or something. She was a very, very possessive wife. Extremely nervous. Every time he would talk to us, it made her very nervous.
Isn't this fascinating?
And
I mean, we're talking about one of the most beautiful, talented women who've ever lived.
Yes.
And she's insecure about Robert Wagner, who I'm not that impressed with Robert Wagner.
And I kept wanting to reach over and say, "You know what? You don't need to worry about me or Minda. We're not after your husband. We're not even remotely interested in your husband."
But even if you were, was he the kind of person who was interested in people who were interested in him? I mean, that's the funny thing. If he were faithful, why would she even think about that?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I have no idea. We never got vibrations like that. We were just five people having a lot of fun together.
Yeah.
Just the way we were the other night, you
know?
There was nobody trying to seduce anybody or anything like
that. Not that you know of. seriously, you've had these so many opportunities with these people, but it is amazing. Now, Anthony Newley was someone that you knew. Of course,
no.
He was married to Joan Collins,
no,
but you
I
didn't
never,
know him.
I never met Anthony Newley. No.
And is that because you knew Joan after or
yeah.
before? You know her
it's
after.
Because I knew Joan afterwards. I met her on Minda's boat, and then she had me staying at her house a lot. I ended up staying at her house a lot. And she stayed at my house now. And I mean, we've had a 35-year relationship, Joan and I now. We've been through a lot together. So
now she is going to be on this program.
I hope so. I'd love to get her on your program.
I think
I think she would like to do it, you know.
If she knows what's good for her. Look, she wants to work in this business, it starts here, okay? You don't kiss my ring, you don't work. No, seriously, I would love to. It would be so much fun to talk to her. But
It would be. You two would be a hoot together. You're both so funny.
Yeah, a hoot. No, but it is interesting, though, that you've just known all these people. And you mentioned to me Elizabeth Taylor and Tony Bennett. We don't have that much time left. I want to make sure we get to everybody we were talking about.
Well, the Elizabeth Taylor thing isn't so big. It's just that Joan co-starred with George Hamilton in a made-for-TV movie called Monte Carlo that actually Thomas and I started out trying to produce. And Joan was at the height of her dynasty thing. She'd just gotten the Golden Globe for Best Dramatic Actress on television. And but Thomas and I went around trying to raise first of all, we were trying to find a leading man for Joan. No one would do it. No one wanted to work
understand.
Opposite her. She
Why?
Was too old. She was too old.
Too old?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, we would go talk to these actors. Who's that one that that we brought the script up to his...
Pierce Brosnan.
Pierce Brosnan. These people, they all want to interact with 22-year-old girls.
Right.
You know, and Joan had just turned 40 or something shocking like that, 50-something
yeah.
that, you know, is, and they were just saying she's all washed up, she's
right.
too old.
Right.
We couldn't find a leading man for her. It was so infuriating. It was just absolutely
So you guys were producing movies.
Well, no, not really.
You were
Joan
trying
had
to
just
produce
asked
movies.
Us if we would be interested in being involved in the production. We were kind of
Wait, was this how you were
going
to get to Elizabeth Taylor? I can't remember. We were talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yes. So anyway, they made the movie without Thomas and me. They ended up making the movie. She and George Hamilton co-starred. And the night that it was to be shown on television, Joan had a few people over for dinner. And she had George Hamilton, who co-starred with her,
right.
who was at that time cohabiting with Elizabeth Taylor. George Hamilton
Wait
and Elizabeth Taylor.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
I've never heard this.
Yes.
Alvin, this is some juicy gossip on the Eric Metaxas show. George Hamilton.
And Elizabeth Taylor.
And Elizabeth Taylor.
Had a big thing.
Had a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. They were together for a while.
I've got a thing for Hamilton's tan, but I just can't. He just won't give me the time of day.
He also lived in our building.
He lived in your building?
In the building
so,
that
But wait a second. So
David
he
Bowie
and Elizabeth, in her, it, she was married 8 times.
Yeah.
But you're saying that she... had many years some kind of relationship with George Hamilton. All right, we're gonna have to put a pause. We'll be right back to find out more. Isn't that why people tune in? Don't go away. Talking to Mallory Millett. Mallory, I did the same thing with Pat Boone recently. We just talked, you know, showbiz anecdotes. It's just so much fun.
Yeah,
instead
he knows
of talking
everybody.
About, oh my
yeah.
God, forget it. He's talking about meeting the Queen twice, that kind of thing. But he never shook Mick Jagger's hand. And oh boy, between that and the bongo player for Bowie, you've had a life. Okay, so you were just talking about Elizabeth Taylor
yes, so
having some kind of relationship with George Hamilton, which I don't really like to picture. I'm a Christian. I don't want to picture that, but go ahead.
Well, it was this night that the Monte Carlo movie was going to be
so this
premiered
is
on
the
television.
Late, the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I think. Is
yeah.
that what it is, honey? Yeah. Okay. So I've gotten all of them mixed up, the 80s and the 90s and
right.
the aughts.
Hey, they're all decades. They're all
was.
Decades.
So anyway... So Joan arranged this evening where it was just she and the man that she was with at the time and myself and George Hamilton and Elizabeth Taylor and a few other people. There were maybe, you know, nine people there that night.
So this is during the Larry Fortensky period.
No.
That was her eighth husband.
No, she was with George Hamilton at this point.
Oh, really?
Elizabeth Taylor was with George Hamilton.
What do you think of
and
that?
And they were having a big thing that went on for quite a while.
Right. It's so touching.
And so I got to meet, I just got to meet Elizabeth Taylor that night. It's no big,
right?
You know, big friendship or all kinds of intimate situations together. But I just found it so remarkable that everything I've ever heard about Elizabeth Taylor, you know, that she's talks like a sailor, you know, she swears like a longshoreman, that she's this tough. I always thought she was this sort of tough woman.
Yeah, yeah.
She's nothing like that.
Right.
She was the most feminine woman I have ever met in my life. She was so feminine.
Even more feminine than David Bowie?
He wasn't feminine.
No? What about
he was a guy.
So Ziggy Stardust was kind of a guy's guy?
Yeah, he was a guy.
But perfect gentleman, you said.
A perfect gentleman. With me, he was a perfect gentleman. But Elizabeth Taylor was so feminine. And they're always going on about her lavender eyes or violet eyes.
Yeah.
They didn't look like that to me. They looked just like blue eyes to me.
Right.
It was this big deal about these eyes. They were very beautiful eyes. But she was just so
and
feminine.
And she just had the two of them.
And, yes.
Okay. Just
she
want to
was
be clear. She's not
very,
superhuman.
Very
just
sweet.
Two eyes like the rest of us.
But a very sweet woman. Very, very feminine.
You must have seen her in National Velvet with Mickey Rooney when she's 11 or 12 years old. When I see that film, it is so touching to see her as a girl.
Isn't it?
It's so moving see her as a girl. And then when you see her in later films like... the painful, you know, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. It's so painful and so it's such a cliche of the era that they would do things like that.
Terrible.
And it's kind of heartbreaking because I think of her as that innocent girl that is just so moving in that
she
film,
was an
National Velvet.
Person,
absolutely beautiful. And she's diminutive and feminine.
So feminine. I never met a woman more feminine.
How
she
about
was
diminutive?
Like a flower.
Is she the most diminutive woman you've ever met?
Well,
was she teeny weeny?
No.
No?
She wasn't as tiny as Lisa Shreve, for instance.
Okay.
You know, but she just struck me so different. She was so different from anything people had ever described.
Mm.
I was quite shocked, you know.
We're gonna drag you into one final segment. Folks, it's a special coda that we're going to have. We're probably not going to be able to air it today or wherever this is taping. We're going to get into a few things that we can't talk about now because we're out of time. MalloryMillett.com. Mallory, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, folks, this is Eric Metaxas. You have heard me talking about Nutramedics, the professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993, and which donates a minimum of 50% of their profits to global charities and missions. Now, look, I want to support a company like that, and I want to take care of my health at the same time. I would think that you should, too. Go to Nutramedics.com, Nutramedix.com, and use the code ERIC for 20% off. ERIC is the code for 20% off.